The administration's rebalance to Asia will put more emphasis on the Pacific region of the world and more spotlight on U.S. Pacific Command. That's where we're focusing today on Pentagon Solutions. Every Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour, we look at issues the Pentagon's dealing with and potential solutions for those issues. Navy Admiral Samuel Locklear is commander of U.S. Pacific Command, or PACOM. He spoke at the Surface Navy Association's annual convention here in Washington last week, and he started his presentation with some background information on his command.
The Pacific Command has always been held by a Navy four-star. It's the oldest COCOM that we have, and geographically it's the largest COCOM. It covers about 52% of the world. My particular field of play each day is from Hollywood to Bollywood, is the way I describe it. As far north as you want to go and far south as you need to go. So in that particular, let me frame for you a little bit about how you need to think about the Indo-Asia Pacific and then start to reflect on the implications of that for the future of surface warfare. First, it is the most populated part of the world. How many people in the world today? About 7 billion people. That's projected to grow to 9 or 10 billion in this century. And in that period of time, about 7 out of every 10 people are projected to live in what I call Hollywood to Bollywood, Indo-Asia Pacific, 7 out of 10 people. In this area are the largest countries in the world, multi-populated countries, China, India. There are the largest economies in the world. 3 of the 4 largest economies are in this part of the world. It is the economic engine that drives the world today. It is the economic engine. Over half of everything that moves on the surface of the earth generates out of the Indo-Asia Pacific, and that number is growing. So, you know, we always talk about, well, 90% of everything in the world flows on the surface by something, right? Well, that's true. That has been true for a long time. But what is changing is that over the last couple of decades, the amount of things in that 90% has quadrupled. So every big screen TV, everything that you can go to Walmart, walk down any aisle that pumps into the global economy flows in this part of the world. In the South China Sea alone, over half of all the energy supplies afloat every day move through the South China Sea. So I know we, the surface warriors, we've all spent time in the Straits of Hormuz and pining over that problem, but the problem is equally or more acute in that this part of the world as we go forward. It is the world's largest democracies are here. The world's largest Islamic democracy. The world's smallest republic are here. 5 of our 7 treaty allies are here. When I took this job, I got asked, who are our treaty allies? I won't give you a quiz. How many treaties do we have? Anybody know the answer to that? There's about 7 treaties. 5 of those treaties, allies, are predominantly in the PACOM AOR, and many of them are historic. Our oldest ally, Thailand, 181 years this year is an ally. And many of them have been bought through many years of working together, and some of them were spawned by things like World War II that left us with a world that needed to be reshaped through those alliances. And those alliances continue to be strong and important in the Asia Pacific we see it today. It also is the most militarized area in the world. The most militarized area in the world. I know that's hard sometimes watching the international news every night to grasp this, because we're always have been focused for the last couple of decades on a Middle East centric look for a lot of good reasons. But 7 of the 10 largest armies in the world are in my AOR. All of the largest and most capable navies in the world are in my area of responsibility. 5 of the world's declared nuclear powers are in the 36 countries that I look at. So it's also a region that doesn't have the historic mechanisms in place to be able to help you control what happens in the security environment. So there is not a NATO. I mean, think about NATO. We spent a lot of time, I just came from NATO to this job. I love NATO. If you take the United States out of NATO, all of Europe's 500 million people. I mean, 500 million people is not even a drop in the bucket in Southeast Asia. There's 150 70 million people or so in Bangladesh. It's 200 million in Indonesia. So starting to get the scale of complexity of what this part of the world means to us as a nation and the implications for what it means to our military and our Navy. So let me just talk about some of the challenges here. So think about this Hollywood to Bollywood. Think about all these people. Think about the center of energy or the center of gravity for our global economy. Think about world's largest Islamic democracy. Think about a general sense of terrorism. My sense of terrorism in this part of the world is that it is a problem. I mean, more IEDs go off in my AOR every day or every month than anywhere else in the world. Okay, but they're just in a large area, so they get consumed by the depth of it. But my take on the terrorism is that we have it. But it's different than the Middle East. Someone has enlightened me that radicalism, particularly that spawned by radical Islam, came to the Middle East via sword, and it came to the Asia Pacific via merchants. And so it does play out differently in this part of the world. So I think from a terrorist perspective that we're probably in the front end of the problem rather than the tail end of the problem, which we are in other parts of the world, which means we have an opportunity, I think, to shape that environment if we stay engaged and we do it right. But what are some of the challenges? I have a center for excellence that works for me called HADR, Center of Excellence. So when I showed up as PACOM, I said, well, why do I own this thing? I mean, it's one of those, you know, admin things. You could say, well, why do I have this command under me? Well, it was quick to point out to me that 80% of all natural disasters in the world happen in my AOR. 80%. And the impact on humanity because of the numbers of people and where they live, which many of them live in the littorals, and a growing number live in the littorals, the impact of these on humanity is significant. So there's veterans here of the Tomodachi. There's veterans of Aceh. There are veterans of just probably beyond in the central part of the Philippines. So the natural disaster piece is not going to go away. The implications of climate change. Now, there's a raging debate around the world by scientists and everybody else about is there climate change. I'm not going to step into that argument with you. But what I can tell you that the implications for weather, the implications for what's happening in the environment today because of the mass of humanity and where they live is becoming more and more important to the security environment, particularly the security environment in my particular AOR. And that has to be thought through. Transnational threats, terrorism, drugs, most of the precursors for methamphetamines, which is a drug of choice today, come out of my AOR. And you can't interdict drugs in the Pacific Ocean. You just can't do it. It's just too big. So you have to figure out what are the networks and how are the networks being fed, where's the money going, where's the money being funneled, and where are the implications for that money on our own security interest and the security of the American people.
That's Navy Admiral Samuel Locklear. He's commander of U.S. Pacific Command, speaking at the Surface Navy Association's annual convention here in Washington last week. You'll hear more from Admiral Locklear in just a moment on Pentagon Solutions, on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions. Every Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour, we take a look at the issues the Pentagon's dealing with and potential solutions for those issues. Shrinking budgets inside the Defense Department mean a close look at high-profile weapons systems. Those systems, of course, are the tools commanding officers use to execute their missions. Admiral Samuel Locklear is commander of U.S. Pacific Command, and he spoke at the Surface Navy Association's annual convention here in Washington last week. In the second half of his presentation, he talked about some of those tools his sailors use.
I applaud the Surface Navy for taking the chance to push that littoral combat ship early. Now, early is relative, okay? I like to tell this story. A few years ago, Admiral Meyer, when he was here in Crystal City, he would routinely call some of us over for counsel. I think I was a one-star at that time. And he would call you in your room, and then you'd have this dialogue about the Navy and how he felt about the Navy. And on one particular one of my come-arounds, he said to me, I'm going to tell you about the 17-year locust. I said, what's the 17-year locust? He says, a 17-year locust, he says, that's how long it takes the United States from the time you think about a ship until it becomes operationally relevant is 17 years. I said, I don't believe it. So I started going back and I started calculating it, and he's about right. So we, Service Navy, set off down the road a littoral combat ship, and we said, we're going to do this in, Barry, how many years? Seven or eight? Four. Then we said seven. Then we had said eight. Then we said nine. And we did do better, but we didn't do a whole lot better by my calculation. As I think back on it, when I was with Zabrowski back in the, when I was an aide to the vice chief back in the night about 1998, I happened to be in a room where they were talking about this ship, and this ship was going to be Street Fighter. Remember that? And that quickly morphed to something beyond Street Fighter, because that sounded really too angry, I think, for the trade magazines. But it went to Street Fighter. So that was 1998. So that about was the time, the genesis of the thinking of what littoral combat ship was going to be. It was going to be fast. It was going to be in the littorals. It was going to be multi-mission. It was going to be reconfigurable. It was going to have a small crew. It was going to do all these things. So that's 1998. So here we are, 15 years, 16 years. So you'll have really the first LCS show up about 17 years later. But it's showing up with a whole different concept and a lot of different aspects of things that are going to make it, I think, a key player in the security environment in the world that I deal with, which has got a lot of littorals and a lot of interesting things going on in that. So as you go, now let's take a look at forward. So as you go forward, what's going to remain constant for surface warfare? Well, the world's not going to get any smaller. Now, it's getting smaller in other domains, cyber domain. I guess you could say the air domain is getting smaller. But in our domain, it's not going to get any smaller. So you have to be there to be relevant. You know, having forces that are forward, having forces that are rotationally forward, having forces that can sustain themselves forward and be there is important for surface warfare. So I encourage us to resist any risk or any urge we have at all to sequester ourselves in some quiet home port somewhere, because our relevance will diminish because you can't get there fast enough. Because the world today, warfare in the world today is going to move too fast. And the surface Navy of the future has got to be on station, has got to be well-trained, has got to be ready to do what it takes. So what else is going to remain the same? Distance will be a tyranny. Logistics will remain a tyranny. We already we're at the smallest Navy since, 1916? In numbers, smallest Navy. Capable Navy, is it big enough? Well, my testimony says it's not. Okay, some in this room may disagree. I say it's not big enough. It's not big enough for the world we're in and the way we deploy ships today in the emerging security environment. But that said, it is going to be one of the things that remain constant. We're going to struggle to maintain numbers because of the implications of our budget, the implications of our industrial base, and our own proclivity to want to take 17 years to build ships, and that gets expensive and it takes time. So that's going to remain a constant, I think. But more important, I think, what remains constant is the importance of competent, well-trained and well-led people. Competent, well-trained, and well-led people. Because in the end, we can stack up all the great Arleigh Burkes and all the great amphib ships and all the great LCSs and put them on into the pier, and they'll be a stack a mile high, but they don't matter if you don't have young men and women that can make them work and make them work in an increasingly difficult environment, increasingly challenging environment, a long ways away from our homeland. So what is changing? Well, our historic dominance that most of us in this room have enjoyed is diminishing. No question. So let me say that again. Our historic dominance that for the, most of us during our careers have enjoyed is diminishing. Now, some of that's because of what we were able to do. We as a nation provided a security environment, particularly in the Asia-Pacific area, that allowed the rise of nations, that allowed the rise of economies, that allowed these economic miracles that are happening in some of our allies and partner countries. And this has generated wealth, it's generated democracies, it's generated perspectives on security, and it's caused those nations to want to go to pursue their own security mechanisms. And when they do that, they take money and they buy and they invest in resources to buy defenses. And so it's not unusual for us to need to sit here. I know it's going to be a highlight that our dominance is diminishing, but it's something we have known was going to happen and that we have to expect to continue to happen. So what does that mean? Well, it means that the future generation service warfare officers have got to, I think, to pay more particular attention to the ability to show up on the scene and be lethal and be dominant. Lethal and dominant. And to bring all the great aspects of information technology and warfare technology and all the things that our great country can produce for us and to be able to show up and to be lethal and dominant. We have to come to grips with those areas that we know we have vulnerabilities in. We have to come to grips with them. Okay? And we can't wish them away. We can't wish them into the next generation. And there are some of those areas where we have to think hard about where are we being challenged by technology and what is our answer to that. Now, every great generation in this generation of naval officers sitting here is as great as anyone that's ever been, has acknowledged those challenges and then stepped up to them. The Wayne Myers of the world, the Hank Mustons of the world, I could go on and just name them, that who said, hey, we have an area here where we need to focus, we need to get after it, and the technology was found, the resources were put in place. So I just say we need to think about this. We need to think about it. But I'm proud of the readiness of the ships today, and I'm proud of the readiness that our surface warriors, leadership, has been able to provide and produce, particularly during this period of time we've gone through the budget issues and the sequestration. So from where I sit as a PACOM commander, we have about as ready a force with great ships as I've seen in a long time. Now, I hope that we continue that. But having good readiness is only one part of the equation. When you show up to the future fights that we envision, the future warfare scenarios, security scenarios that we envision in the 21st century, many of them could emanate out of the PACOM AOR, we have to also show up and be relevant. To be honest with you, our lack of urgency on development of the next generation of surface-launched over-the-horizon cruise missiles is troubling. We're behind the need. And we need to think about that. We need to think about what is surface warfare's role in other than defensive operations. As a PACOM commander, I need you to be thinking in the offensive mode. I need you to be thinking, how are you going to show up? How are you going to be dominant? How are you going to be lethal? And that requires you to think about all scenarios, not just the ones that we've been dealing with in the last several years where we have enjoyed basic air superiority, basic sea superiority. There's places in the world where in this century you won't have that. And whenever these magnificent $2 billion warships show up, they're going to have to be dominant. And they're going to have the tools to be dominant. We also have to look and embrace the value of asymmetric capabilities that we bring. We have to continue to pursue unmanned systems. They do bring a tremendous asymmetric advantage to me, to commanders like me who have to deal with increasingly complex scenarios. Things like offensive mining need to be thought about. We haven't talked about a mining for a long time. In fact, sometimes it becomes a stepsister to our dialogue in surface warfare. But surface warfare community, in my view, has to embrace the mine community, has to embrace this as an asymmetric, not only as a defensive capability, but as an asymmetric capability that allows us to be dominant in a battle space that we may not always be dominant in when we enter. High-speed lift, important to me. How do you get things around faster? This is a surface warfare equity. How do you use the systems that you have, the existing systems you have, in different ways? I think that we've shown that to be true with our Aegis systems and our ability to convert those to ballistic missile defense platforms. But we have a wide array of great systems that need to be transitioned into the next century and have to bring those capabilities that make them relevant in the battle space of that century. And then we have to unleash the incredible innovation of the force. You have to make sure that inside of our self-talk and the way we lead our own people, that we're allowing the future generation to tell us how to best do these things. And they're the ones who are going to tell us. It's not the guys on the front row here. It's the young lieutenants and the young lieutenant commanders and the young chiefs and first-class petty officers who are going to say, hey, this is a way to do this. And we have to ensure that we continue to have a force that's vital. I think we do today. I see it from a PACOM commander. I think you're pretty healthy. But I say we have to stay after that. And then for all of you, and who's got the next big idea, that's what we're all waiting on. So what's next? What's next? So now we've got littoral combat ship that's going to roll in. It's got a place in the battle space. We're going to have a legacy force of DDGs. The cruisers are going to transition out. Our amphibious force is going to be modernized at whatever pace. But what's the next big idea for surface warfare? What's the next big idea? And then finally, let me close by saying, I think that you all should think about, as you think about both from an industry perspective and a surface warfare leadership perspective, you need to start bringing the calculus of the Indo-Asia Pacific more into your thinking about what it means for the future of the Navy, what it means for the future of the surface warfare Navy. I mean, this is your plum to pick, okay? It's your plum to pick because there are so many opportunities for surface warfare in the battle space that could be defined by the challenges that are in the Indo-Asia Pacific. And embracing those in your procurement, and embracing them in your training, and embracing them in your future outlook, I think is critical to the success not only of the surface Navy, but of our U.S. Navy and our U.S. policy and the interests of the U.S. American people.
That's Admiral Samuel Locklear concluding his presentation at the Surface Navy Association's annual convention here in Washington last week on Pentagon Solutions. Admiral Locklear's commander of U.S. Pacific Command, PACOM. You can find a link to watch his entire presentation at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon.